The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of KLAY or those who advertise their products or services on this station.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to Know Your Rights, the show dedicated to educating you, the listener, on your legal rights and resources available. Be sure to check out our website at www.knowyourrights.com as we post the audio for each show, as well as follow-up information about each topic and each guest that we have on the show. You can also email me at noah@knowyourrights.com. Make sure to include two R's in there for knowyourrights.com. Today, I'll also take some calls later in the show, and I'll prompt you for that. If there are some legal topics you want to talk about, call us at 253-584-1480. That's 253-584-1480. Remember not to include personal issues. Instead, let's talk general issues, national, state, local topics from a legal perspective that affect you or that you're interested in. Speaking of which, there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on in the world, legally speaking, but it seems like there always is, isn't there? Nationally, we have the gun debate, focusing on the Second Amendment's right to bear arms versus the right of states, or i.e. people, to feel and be safe from persons bearing arms on the other side. That focus also touches us locally as much as it touches any community. We've had recent school shootings, both high school and college, if you recall, and a recent near catastrophe avoided when a grandmother in Everett made the very difficult decision to report her grandchild and get him help when she suspected that there might be the next school shooting. As a result of our own tragedies, as well as the mass shooting in Vegas, the school shooting in Parkland, Florida, there are some efforts in our legislature, our own state legislature here in Washington, to ban rapid fire devices like the bump stock that was used in Vegas. There's also a developing law regarding safe storage of firearms in our homes. Our Attorney General, Bob Ferguson, is also leading an effort to restrict sales of AR-15 and other semi-automatic, large-capacity magazine-type weapons. When we have Mr. Ferguson on our show later this month, I believe it's going to be later this month, we can ask him about some of those plans and some of those issues. Now, there's even retailers that are developing a social conscience and moving to raise the age for purchasing weapons like AR-15s from the age of 18 to 21, which yesterday it was filed, I guess, and today it was reported. It's brought a regional lawsuit next door in Oregon by a 19-year-old wanting to buy an AR-15. I was just telling a friend of mine, an Arkansas lawyer, that that's exactly what I felt was going to come when the stores started raising the limit on their own without any legislation. We'll have to bring in some constitutional experts on that. I think that's a really interesting topic, and we'll have to figure out and determine whether or not private stores can discriminate based on age, or whether the state can on a independent safety type ground and what the limits are to the Second Amendment. There's also an effort to arm teachers here in Washington State, as there is nationally, and that's a hot topic. We've heard State Senator, I believe it's Phil Fortunato, say that he's in favor of it and intends to introduce legislation to do so. We've also heard from teachers marching in protest against that idea, showing us that there's a lot of teachers that are against it. And no doubt we want to hear from the parents on that issue too. What are they saying? Do they want their kids to attend an armed fortress? Would it be safer or more dangerous to have guns in school? And no doubt, again, it'd be nice to have school experts in here to talk about some of the issues, ramifications of arming teachers with weapons. Another national story is the steel tariffs that Trump has announced. So he's seeking to add 25% tax on imports of steel and a 10% tax on imports of aluminum in an effort to keep those industries afloat here locally. Well, how many jobs will that save us in the U.S.? What about Washington? Washington State, how will that affect our economy here? How important are those industries to our state? Will it affect us locally here in Pierce County in the Tacoma area? We've heard that beer cans, soup cans, and the cost of cars are going to increase. How soon is that going to happen? What about the effect of Port of Tacoma? Are the number of containers coming in, or is that going to reduce? Is it going to have an effect on that stream of commerce that comes out of the Port of Tacoma? And from a legal standpoint, can countries impose tariffs like these for protectionist purposes? What about national security purposes? Because that's what the administration is saying. We need steel, we need aluminum for national security purposes. We've got to have these industries in place. And maybe there's some merit to that. The U.S., of course, as many of you know, the U.S. is a part of the World Trade Organization, the WTO, which allows our products to be exported to markets. And for those markets, it requires those markets to be open to us. If we choose to protect certain industries, then other countries retaliate against us by protecting certain industries in their own countries. They can tax some of our products that are export that are high volume exports. Maybe that's wine to Canada. I think we've heard the Canadian authorities talk about that. Maybe it's rice to Japan. Japan didn't want to open its market to rice for the longest time from the U.S., but that's a requirement under WTO, or it has been historically. So we can't have it both ways. We can't allow products in, and we can't force other countries to take our own products. But that's often what we want to do, and other countries want to do. And of course, under the WTO, their countries can't dump their products here. They can't bring a product here and offer it at below what it costs them to produce it. That's dumping, and there's anti-dumping provisions in the WTO. They can't kill local competition. I think Walmart did that, if you remember back in the days when Walmarts would go into a small community and they'd want to run out the small pharmacy or the five and dime store, they would undersell them and do that. I think they were sued for that. There's also today, and another bit of breaking news, there's word from Olympia that Washington State is the first state to pass its own net neutrality law, and that's fantastic. It requires ISPs, internet service providers, to treat content equally without favoritism to companies that pay more or that benefit the ISP more, and without restricting access or speeds to sites that the ISP disagrees with. Maybe they're morally wrong, maybe politically incorrect, or different than what the ISP chooses. So you cannot favor or disfavor the traffic or the content of a particular site and slow down speed. That's so important. But what's going to come of that? Is the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, going to weigh in on this? What about the U.S. Congress? Is there going to be a suit by an ISP against the state saying, you can't do this, it's preempted by federal law? So it'll be interesting how that breaks out. And if it ends up breaking out in a certain way, we'll definitely get someone in here to talk about it. And maybe Bob Ferguson will be the person from the AG's office. So what happens nationally, and this is the point of this intro, what happens naturally, nationally or statewide affects us here locally. What happens here also affects the globe, because in today's world, we're all interconnected. And that's the way that it is in this society. So now, after giving that little introduction about some of the things that are going on and how there are some legal implications or other effects that that involve us here locally, I'm going to shift gears on you. Today's show, despite that introduction, today's show is actually about medical malpractice, something that is national, statewide, and yet very, very local to us. At one time or another, all of us or someone very close to us, but more likely all of us, are going to have seen a doctor or be admitted to a hospital. I mean, that's the fact. All of us, whether we're born there, where we get a broken arm or an illness, or our grandmother or our mother or whoever it is, we're all going to have some involvement with a hospital and a doctor. So today's topic, medical malpractice, is going to be a very related, relevant one to all of us and to your rights. Stay tuned. We've got more to come in just a second.
On this historic day, Jack in the Box introduces a fast food first, the Food Truck Series. Asian fried chicken sandwich with crunchy Asian slaw and gochujang mayo, the pork belly BLT with tangy honey aioli, and the prime rib cheesesteak smothered in provolone cheese. And to that I say, hang on, let me turn the music down. I'll take one of each and an order of fries, please.
Sounds good, Jack. Pull up to the next window.
Thank you.
Try the new Food Truck Series at Jack in the Box today. Limited time only. Price and participation may vary.
Hi, I'm Noah from Noah Your Rights, the show that helps educate you on your legal rights and resources available to you. You know, I want to be your lawyer, but more than that, I want to help empower you. I want to help provide you the tools that you need to be successful in your case, whether you hire me or you hire someone else. I want you to check out our website, www.noahyourrights.com. See what resources are there. See how we can help you. And if there's something that's missing, email me at noah@noahyourrights.com, and we'll see what we can do to add the material that that you need to be successful in your case.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
You've accidentally cut your daughter's bangs unevenly. Do you A, line things up a centimeter from her hairline?
Man, oh man.
No, sweatbands are so hot right now. Everyone's wearing them, like that basketball player and that other basketball player.
B, get spiritual.
Mom, where did all the mirrors go?
A reflection could never capture our true selves.
Huh?
Beauty is within.
C, look on the bright side.
Less time blow drying, more time texting.
Or D, show empathy.
Mom, you really don't have
to... Ta-da! Twinsies!
I kind of love it. As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Know Your Rights, the show that's dedicated to educating you on your legal rights and resources available to you. Make sure you check out our website, www.knowyourrights.com, or email me, noah@knowyourrights.com. Remember, we're going to take some calls in the last segment, 253-584-1480, if you want to talk about a particular topic or a topic of interest to you that has some legal implications, and we'll try to address that. And if we don't address it on today's show, we'll try to pick it up for a show down the road. I do have a couple shows lined up. Next week, we're going to have Judge David Larson out of the Federal Way Municipal Court. He's going to talk to us about all things municipal court, what type of issues come before the court, how to stay out of court, how you can use the court to your benefit, to the municipal court. So that'll be an important topic for next week. We're also we're going to have Bob Ferguson on the show, the Washington State Attorney General. He's going to talk to us about developing suits that the state has put its weight behind, and some developments on those fronts, as well as some legislation that he might intend to introduce into the state legislature. For now, today's show, episode 10 on this beautiful day, and it is a beautiful day in Tacoma, Washington, Lakewood, Washington. It's sunny and just over 50 degrees and no complaints here. We like those sunny days, and spring is just right around the corner. Today's topic, though, is another weighty one. And unfortunately, with legal issues, sometimes they can be weighty, and not always are they the most uplifting of discussions, but they're important discussions, and it's important that we talk about these issues and we know our rights. You know, we trust healthcare professionals. We trust doctors. We pay a high price for medical care. The doctors say that the high price is because of lawsuits. That's why you pay so much. That's what we're told all the time, right? Well, I vehemently disagree with that. Even in states that have damage caps, which I think are bad, bad news, and of course they're instituted by healthcare professionals, insurance companies, defense lawyers, but even with states that have these damages caps, how much money that you can recover for a death, for a major injury that's caused by clear negligence by a healthcare professional, even in those states, insurance premiums went up. So what about the correlation there? If you're blaming the plaintiff's lawyers and you're blaming these lawsuits, why aren't the insurance premiums going down? Well, I think you're going to have to look at the insurance companies and not lawyers for that. Besides, it's lawyers that uncover mistakes, that shine the light on the mistakes, that bring attention to them, and ultimately obtain compensation for harms, for injuries, for deaths. So they play a very important role, a very important role. Wasn't it in Macbeth that it was said that one way to, if I'm going to start a revolution, the first thing I'm going to do is kill all the lawyers. And, you know, and that's been a joke all the time. Comedians use it. You hear it a lot, sort of out of context. But the reason that that's so important, and Shakespeare included it in Macbeth, was lawyers hold together the fabric of society. You know, we tend to view lawyers as polarizing figures. We tend to paint them as... or in a bad light, and sometimes the lawyers bring that on themselves, but they are important. They serve an important part of society in bringing to light claims like medical malpractice, bringing to light product defect claims, bringing to light injustices, protecting your rights, standing up to the president, standing up to legislature, standing up to the wrongs of society. It provides you a voice to the courts and the system that otherwise you wouldn't have. So they play an important role, even if we vilify them as we do. But back to medical malpractice, which is the subject of our conversation today. So the number of mistakes, if you look at some of the research that's out there, the number of mistakes in medical malpractice type cases or medical case mistakes is staggering. According to the Washington Post, in 2006, medical errors had become the third leading cause of death in the U.S. The Washington Post relied on a study that was published in a medical journal. Third leading cause of death in the U.S. behind heart disease and cancer, claiming an estimated 251,000 lives a year. That's more than respiratory disease. That's more than accidents. That's more than strokes. That's as many as 700 deaths a day in the U.S., nearly 10% of all deaths annually being attributed to medical malpractice, medical mistakes. It's just an incredible number to get your hands around, especially considering that these deaths are incurred by people seeking help for an illness, for an injury, for an ailment, and they're being killed not by the illness, injury, or ailment, but from the care that they were receiving for it. And so then you got to ask yourself, why? Why? Well, according to one report, and as you can imagine, there's a myriad of causes. I mean, you don't even have to read a report to think, to sort of extrapolate this out. What are the causes of hospital negligence? I mean, the reports are great, and that they're going to share something, and that's going to be there's no one cause. Causes are reported as unclear instructions in handing patients from one doctor to the next. You remember the doctor's handwriting not being able to be read or deciphered, and that was a problem for pharmacists trying to fulfill prescriptions and giving the wrong prescription, something that someone could have a violent reaction to, could kill them. So I think that system's been addressed. They're trying to do an electronic system as opposed to doctor's handwritings. But passing on communications from one doctor to another health professional, that's still leading to a lot of deaths. Another is just simple mistakes, overworked doctors, inexperienced doctors, inexperienced staff, and then there's always just blatant negligence. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of shocking cases: removing the wrong ovary, operating on the wrong arm, operating on the wrong patient, prescribing the wrong drug, cutting a nearby organ, leaving tools inside the body, using unapproved methods, devices, or pharmaceuticals, you name it. It's happened. It's out there. You might even recall the recent case against UW Medical Center. Harborview, I think, was a defendant in there, and there's a pharmaceutical company. That was part of that case. I think it only came to light after there was a U.S. government investigation. Perhaps it was led by the FBI. I don't remember who was the investigative authority. Maybe it was the FDA that investigated, but there were deaths related to this pharmaceutical company that had lied to the public, lied to doctors, lied to everybody, and they had this experimental drug. It was a filler, like a concrete or a cement, bone cement filler, that had been approved for certain uses, but had not been approved for use in the spine. And in fact, on swines, on pigs that had been used as a guinea pig, forgive me for that, but as a guinea pig for this experimental drug, if you want to call it, for this cement, bone cement, when it had been used in the spine, it killed them. It caused blood clotting, other side effects, and it would kill them. Well, unbeknownst to the FDA, unbeknownst to the families, unbeknownst to the patient, this pharmaceutical company has decided to convince doctors and actually sometimes appear in the medical room, in the operating room, instructing doctors how to use this experimental drug to be used in the spine to repair spinal type injuries. Well, that happened in Washington State, and there were at least two persons that died from that. And so there was a suit against UW and Harborview that brought a lot of that to light because those deaths were covered up. Your loved one dies in the operating room. We're told, well, you know, that was informed consent there. That's one of the risks of any type of surgical operation, especially one on the spine, is there's the risk of death. We're sorry about that. But they're not disclosing that this experimental, unapproved bone cement was used, and that was probably, most likely, the cause of the death and the blood clotting that occurred and that ultimately resulted in death. So, you know, about that disclosed risk thing, that just drives me crazy. Doctors and defense lawyers always want to try to shield themselves from negligence because of they want to hide behind these disclosures that they make. If they could get away with it, I think they would try to disclose everything in the world, every single possible risk. And when I'm in court, I hear it all the time. I hear the defense lawyers, well, that's a disclosed risk. That's a disclosed risk. Well, it doesn't matter. You get in a car, you get on the freeway, you leave your house, you get on the car. Someone could stop you. I mean, the National Highway Transportation Association can stop and say, hey, before you get on this highway and you drive, you know that a risk is getting in a car accident. It could be serious bodily injury or death. Sure. Yeah, I understand that that's a risk of driving. I'm going to try to be careful. And everything in my ability, I'm going to try to do the best I can. But I can't control everything everyone else does. And if they're negligent, they're responsible. It doesn't matter if it's a disclosed risk or not. And this whole disclosed risk running into negligence as a shield is just drive. It's gone too far, and it drives me crazy. It's not a shield. It doesn't shield negligence. And doctors that try to say, well, every procedure has this risk, and is it an acceptable risk? It happens 1% or 2% of the time. That's an acceptable risk, and so we're not negligent when that happens. Yeah, if you cut the wrong organ, if you leave stuff in the body that wasn't supposed to be there, if you don't do what you're supposed to do in the procedure, like, again, not cutting the organ next to the organ that you're supposed to be removing or operating on, you've made a mistake. And as lawyers, we make mistakes too. But when you're a doctor and you make a mistake, there are grave consequences. Lawyers, when we make mistake, it can be life, liberty type mistakes that we can cause. And we got to be held accountable. We absolutely got to be held accountable. And so must you, doctors. You must be held accountable for that. And you can't hide behind these informed consent disclosures. Well, we're just talking about deaths here. I haven't even broached the subject of serious injuries caused by complications arising from medical error, the very serious injuries. Some estimates put that number at 40 times the number of death. I mean, can you imagine? We're at the third leading cause of death in America has been said to be medical mistake. And then on top of that, you have all these serious injuries, maybe 40 times that number of 231,000 deaths that I talked about before in 2016, or 251,000 deaths. Now, I'm not saying don't go to the doctor or don't go to the hospital, but when you do go, get information, talk to the doctor, be there for your loved ones, be informed. You know, it's one thing to support someone and to take them to the doctor, but why not be involved? Why not try to listen and to ask informed questions, get a second opinion? You know, why rush into some of these things? Why are we so blindly relying on the doctor? Why can't we leave that room, be given an opportunity to think about it, get a second opinion, do some research on our own? What are the risks out there? What are the issues? What are the benefits? What are the dangers to this? But be there for your loved ones. It's not just important to support them. It's important to help them make an informed decision. It's also important to know what's being told to you. What are the risks that are being disclosed to your loved one? You can take notes and you can follow that up. It's not a bad idea to keep a journal about what important interactions you're going to have with a doctor, because you never know what's going to come out of that. So what's the law on, I mean, that's what we're here about, right? Know your rights. What's the law on medical negligence? What's Washington's stance? How do you prove medical negligence? Well, that exciting topic and that very important topic is going to come up right after the break. So stay tuned. We're going to talk about medical negligence, the law in Washington, right after the break.
On this historic day, Jack in the Box introduces a fast food first, the Food Truck Series. Asian fried chicken sandwich with crunchy Asian slaw and gochujang mayo, the pork belly BLT with tangy honey aioli, and the prime rib cheesesteak smothered in provolone cheese. And to that I say, hang on, let me turn the music down. I'll take one of each and an order of fries, please.
Sounds good, Jack. Pull up to the next window.
Thank you.
Try the new Food Truck Series at Jack in the Box today. Limited time only. Price and participation may vary.
Hi, I'm Noah. from Know Your Rights, the show that helps educate you on your legal rights and resources available to you. You know, I want to be your lawyer, but more than that, I want to help empower you. I want to help provide you the tools that you need to be successful in your case, whether you hire me or you hire someone else. I want you to check out our website, www.noahyourrights.com. See what resources are there. See how we can help you. And if there's something that's missing, email me at noah@noahyourrights.com, and we'll see what we can do to add the material that you need to be successful in your case.
Hey, everyone. You know, let's all stop what we're doing right now and take a moment. That felt good, huh? Just like that, we had a nice, special sort of moment. Together. Of course, they don't all need to be quiet moments to be special. They could be loud moments, goofy moments, sporty moments, dorky moments. Moments where we talk or walk or just hang out. It doesn't really matter. They all count. Because every time dads like us take a moment like that to spend with our kids, well, it's pretty momentous. Sounds like somebody agrees. So let's take a moment to make a moment. Today, call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Noah Your Rights, the show dedicated to informing you, educating you, the listener, on your legal rights and resources available to you. Remember our website, www.noahyourrights.com. You can also email me at noah@noahyourrights.com. I'm happy to listen to your inquiries. If you call today, I'll take your call, 253-584-1480. Please, again, keep it general. Let's not talk about specific legal issues. We just don't have that type of confidentiality or privilege on the air. We are live radio broadcasting on Clay 1180 AM out of Tacoma, Lakewood, Washington, and on this beautiful, beautiful day. We're in episode 10 of Know Your Rights, talking about medical negligence. You know, there's so much to talk about with respect to medical negligence. All these topics that we have, whether we're addressing family law or employment law, consumer law, collections law, tax law, bankruptcy law, whatever it is, we can only really just touch the surface, skim the surface on a lot of these topics. And I'm just going to have to continue to try to build the website, add information and resources, and so that we can further bolster what information is available to you, because I just cannot get it in the hour show, the hour program that we have each day. But I will try to outline these issues best I can. If there's a lot of interest in some of the topics that we have, again, you just call me or you email me. Emailing is going to be by far the best way. It's going to give us a little bit more privacy, a lot more privacy, a lot more confidentiality. And then I can address some of these general topics that you have or interest areas that you have. And I do get inquiries, and when they are broad enough in nature to address with other folks, then I certainly will raise those for everyone at the show on the radio, so that we can share it with everyone and address things. You know, one thing that did come up the other day was I was asked about car tabs, and what do we do about these? Your car tabs expire in a certain month, and you know it's on the back of your car. Let's say this is March, so it says March of 2018. How does the police officer know that you do or don't have expired tags? What is your date? March 1? Is it the end of the month? Is it March 15th? Well, the answer is it's the day that your registration certificate says it, and you're going to get the renewal form like a few weeks prior to the date that it actually expires, and you got to obviously renew it before it expires in order to keep current. But that's the date that your registration expires. So if you get pulled over, and hopefully you don't get pulled over just because your tabs say March, and it's like March 6th and they haven't expired yet, they don't expire until March 15th if that's what your registration certificate says. Now, hopefully you're not being pulled over for that. That sounds like a pretextual stop to me, and one that is not going to allow you to get cited for other things. But in any event, you got to have that updated registration. You need to follow the date that's on your registration certificate. Make sure that you have that in the car. If you pay for it, you don't have the new registration certificate. Keep the payment, proof of payment, in the car with you until you can get those tabs updated. Okay, back to episode 10, medical negligence is what we're talking about today. And I was about to talk about the Washington law on medical negligence. Well, a little context first. It used to be, and no doubt that this was advanced by the medical industry, insurance companies, and defense lawyers. And I said that we vilify lawyers. Here I am continuously vilifying defense lawyers. Well, I'm a shade on the plaintiff's side, so sorry to the defense lawyers out there, but I have to group you in there with the medical industry and insurance companies on this one. But it used to be that a patient had to give pre-suit notice for medical cases, for medical negligence cases, prior to filing suit. They also had to have a certificate of merit, i.e. get an expert to sign off that there was medical negligence in the case. That's unconstitutional, and so the Supreme Court held, and those pre-suit certificate of merits, pre-suit notice laws were thrown out. As it stands, in most cases, you have 3 years to bring suit against a healthcare professional for their mistake, for their negligence. There are exceptions for minors, and there's also exceptions for not discovering the negligence until later. Like, let's say scissors were left inside you, and it's been 5 years since the surgery that you had, the only surgery that you had, that you're opened up, and now you go for some x-ray 5 years later, and you find out that there's scissors in there. It has, like, the hospital's name on the, engraved on the scissors, too. I mean, you can find out exactly where they came from. Well, that's most likely going to be the discovery rule, and you most likely have 3 years to file suit from that date of discovery. And minors reach the age of majority, and then they can file in most cases. So 3 years, that's the standard. You can extend that statute of limitations by asking for mediation in good faith. There's a statute that says that. That extends the statute of limitations another year to a fourth year. And you send a certified letter. You send it to the healthcare professional saying, I'd like to mediate this case. I believe there's negligence. Here's why. But let's try to mediate this. And then that will automatically extend out the statute of limitations for a year. Now, be careful in doing that. You definitely want to send it by certified mail. I definitely recommend having a lawyer do that as opposed to you doing it yourself. And you don't want to lose yourself on the statute of limitation. There's generally four types of medical malpractice type claims. There's a failure to diagnose. That's a big one. You know, is this lump? Oh, that lump, it's just a lump. And it turns out to be cancer and lymphoma. It's it's a big deal, or it's benign. It's not benign. So failure to diagnose is a really big one. Improper treatment, obviously the huge one. That's the one that I've been talking about mostly. There's a failure to warn claim, and we're going to talk about that in a second. And then there's this corporate negligence claim. You might not hear about that a lot, but that's like failing to have adequate facilities or supplies provided by a medical facility. And sometimes I include those in my claims too, but as we talk about these other claims, just one thing to know about corporate negligence, it does require expert testimony on that too. After you file your case, so let's say you've found a lawyer, these cases are taken on a contingency. I don't know of any case that's been taken on hourly. I'm sure they exist out there, but let's just say that it's the normal, taken on a contingency. You don't pay anything. The lawyers take a percentage split of your recovery, so no recovery, no fee, you're not paying anything, but you are responsible for cost. You'll conduct discovery, depose the doctor in most cases, and you have to hire your own medical expert. If the law firm that you hire is pretty fairly convinced of wrongdoing, they're likely going to advance your expert witness costs. Not all firms can do that. Small firms have a tougher time. Expert witness costs are expensive. Those bigger firms, or the firms that do a lot of these medical malpractice cases, they're inundated with medical malpractice cases. I mean, they are. They are inundated with them. There are so many cases that they have to turn away. So they have to believe pretty strongly in your case and see that there was pretty clear-cut negligence. Even if your case has negligence, doesn't mean that they're going to take it, because number one, it's got to be clear-cut and to them, to their standard, to that law firm or lawyer standard. And number two, you got to have big damages. And you say, well, look, I mean, my pinky was cut off. I mean, that's pretty big damages. Or the wrong tooth was extracted. I mean, isn't that pretty huge damages? And that law firm might say, I'm not saying they will say, but they might say, you know, Noah, your finger, losing a finger, I mean, that's a pretty big deal. And but, you know, here's the cost, and it's disputed as to why it happened or who was at fault. And here are the costs. I would hope that a law firm would take my case of my missing my finger that was wrongfully removed. But maybe there's other issues, and maybe the medical records say something else and it had to be removed, or you just never know, but each law firm is going to make its own case by case determination about whether or not it's worthwhile for them to take your case. If you have to pay for the expert witness costs, and sometimes that happens, again, if there's not this wholesale belief in your case, or it's a close call, or it's a firm that just doesn't have the type of budget or resources to advance those costs, you might be asked to pay for some expert witness costs, and that can range anywhere from $5,000 to retain someone. I've heard as low as $3,000 to retain an expert witness, up to, if they testify all the way through trial, hopefully this is not your case and I want to scare you off, $100,000. Hopefully those are the cases that are advanced by the big firms that are invested in your case. So what do you have to prove? What do you have to prove in your medical negligence case? Well, to establish medical malpractice in the state of Washington, you got to prove two elements. You have to prove that they failed, the healthcare professional failed to meet the standard of care. That's number one. And number two, that it was the proximate cause of your injury. So standard of care, let's take that. Standard of care is proving that the healthcare provider failed to exercise that, and this is from a statute, that degree of care, skill, and learning expected of a reasonably prudent healthcare provider at the same time, in the same profession or class, in the state of Washington, acting in the same or similar circumstances. So that's a lot. I'm just going to say it again. You have to prove that the healthcare provider failed to exercise that degree of care, skill, and learning expected of a reasonably prudent healthcare provider at that time, so the time of the surgery or incident, in that profession or class to which he belongs. That's another issue, and there's a lot of case law on that, in the state of Washington, acting in the same or similar circumstances. So you gotta have a doctor. If you have a pediatrician, your best expert, if a pediatrician is alleged to have made a mistake, let's say it's a pediatric dentist, you'd want to have another pediatric dentist testify on your side as an expert witness in the state of Washington, or, I mean, ideally, and sometimes that can be really hard, or if it's an outside doctor, a doctor from Idaho, for example, or California, that they have to say that they're familiar with the standard of care in Washington and explain why they're familiar with that, but be part of the same class, so that same sort of area. One doctor can't be a foot doctor and the other doctor a dentist, unless there's some reason why they can cross over into the same class and acting in the same or similar circumstances. So you have to review all the records, understand all the that your expert has to review all the records, understand those records in order to have the same or similar circumstances in order to opine that there was medical malpractice or negligence in that particular case. The second element, the proximate cause one, is that the failure to meet that standard of care has to be the proximate cause of the injury complained of. So you have to say that you have to prove, not just say, but prove that the injury is more or less directly related to the negligence and breach of the standard of care. So if there's, let's go back to the tooth extraction issue. If the wrong tooth is extracted and you say, yeah, that was negligent, he clearly should have extracted the tooth on the left and he took the tooth on the right, or the lower tooth and it was supposed to be the upper tooth, and now my hand hurts. And you say, well, how is your hand the proximate cause, that injury, the proximate, proximately related to the extraction of the teeth? You'd have to prove that connection somehow if your main damage was the hand injury that you talked about. And I know that's an extreme example, but just to give you an idea of the proximate cause, it has to be related. So that those standards are found in RCW, Revised Code Washington, RCW 77040, so 7.70.040. Tons of case law on that. You could type in medical malpractice Washington, medical negligence Washington, you're going to get those types of standards. Generally, you got to prove both elements through medical expert testimony. If you don't have an expert, you're going to face a motion to dismiss. And I face these motions. I faced two of them recently in the last approximately 30 days. You've got to have a medical expert or you're going to face a motion to dismiss. But if you stay tuned, I'll talk to you about a doctrine that's available in the state of Washington that can overcome having an expert witness in your case. So stay tuned after the break and I'll be right back with this informative news.
On this historic day, Jack in the Box introduces a fast food first, the Food Truck Series. Asian fried chicken sandwich with crunchy Asian slaw and gochujang mayo, the pork belly BLT with tangy honey aioli, and the prime rib cheesesteak smothered in provolone cheese. And to that I say, hang on, let me turn the music down. I'll take one of each and an order of fries, please.
Sounds good, Jack. Pull up to the next window.
Thank you.
Try the new food truck series at Jack in the Box today. Limited time only. Price and participation may vary.
Hi, I'm Noah from Noah Your Rights, the show that helps educate you on your legal rights and resources available to you. You know, I want to be your lawyer, but more than that, I want to help empower you. I want to help provide you the tools that you need to be successful in your case, whether you hire me or you hire someone else. I want you to check out our website, www.noahyourrights.com. See what resources are there. See how we can help you. And if there's something that's missing, email me at noah@noahyourrights.com, and we'll see what we can do to add the material that you need to be successful in your case.
Some statistics are surprising. Some are unbelievable. And some are simply unacceptable. Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. Nearly 30%. And that's the average. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone, not just parents, but friends and neighbors and family members, to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, push them a little, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through. Because this is one statistic we simply can't afford to ignore.
You can do your part by going to boostup.org and sending an email, a text message, or even a wake-up call to a student at risk of dropping out. Go to boostup.org and provide the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Noah Your Rights, the show that's dedicated to your legal rights, educating you on your legal rights and the resources that are available to you. Remember to check out our website at www.noahyourrights.com. You can also email me, noah@noahyourrights.com. And if I can't respond during the show, then I'll try to respond to the next ensuing show if it's a matter that sort of is interesting to the population as a whole, to listeners as a whole. Otherwise, I'll just send you, I'll be sure, and I've not done this up to now, I'll be sure to respond to you directly. So you're going to get a personalized message back from me. All right, so we're talking about medical malpractice. We're talking medical negligence in the state of Washington. We're talking about what our rights are, what the standard is in the state of Washington with respect to medical negligence. Now, I've told you about medical mistakes causing, being the third leading cause of death in the United States. Staggering numbers, really, really just incredibly, incredible numbers that just... They tend to just blow you away. You just can't imagine going to the hospital and dying from something that was a mistake that you shouldn't have died from, something that could have been prevented, and going to the hospital was the cause of your death over the illness or ailment that you had. I mean, it's just so, so tragic. Now, on the other side, maybe the healthcare professional will say, well, if you didn't come here, you were in an automobile accident or you had the flu or whatever, you wouldn't have come here. It could have led to the death. Anyway, and I'm sure that's an argument that's advanced at trial in defense of these cases, is that that you would have perished had you not had the help. But it doesn't excuse the negligence, especially in these cases where it's so obvious when the doctors or healthcare professionals are prescribing the wrong drug or operating on the wrong body part or cutting the wrong organ or making a clear mistake, whether they're too sleepy or they're overworked or they don't understand or they're inexperienced, whatever it is. You know, we trust our lives with them, and we expect them to do not only the best that they can do, but we expect them to not make mistakes. Please don't make mistakes. And if you make a mistake, you're going to be held accountable. And that's where we draw the line, and that's where we have these cases, and that's where they argue that the mistakes are acceptable. We argue that they're not. We, the plaintiff's bar, argues that it's not an acceptable mistake within the realm of a reasonable mistake that we excuse from negligence. And they argue that it's a disclosed risk. And then after that, this happens in 1-2% or 3% of cases, and that's within the norm. And so it's not negligent. And I just don't buy that. If you're hearing that from a doctor, you're hearing that from a defense lawyer, get a second opinion, talk to another lawyer about that, and share your case, share what happened. And just don't leave it alone. I mean, ask questions. And you deserve answers, especially if there's been a death or a serious injury in your case. You can call in. I'll take calls today's show, 253-584-1480. Make sure that you don't reveal confidential information. Remember, we're live on air, so we can't keep that. We're not able to establish that attorney-client relationship. We can't keep those things confidential. Well, let's get back to medical negligence. Let's get back to the standards. I promised that I was going to provide a standard, a legal theory that was an exception to this general rule that you got to have medical testimony in a medical expert in a negligence case. And that is the case. It's called res ipsa loquitur. Res ipsa loquitur. So that applies, that doctrine applies when the standard of care is self-evident, like where this mistake was such a gross deviation from ordinary care that a lay person could easily recognize it. That's the case law definition there. When the standard of care is self-evident, where the mistake was of such a gross deviation from ordinary care that a layperson could easily recognize it. And I'll just give you two examples. Leaving some scissors, and I mentioned that before, leaving scissors in or screw in the patient. So something that's not supposed to be there and you've left it there, or operating on the wrong body part. I think there are other cases that talk about hitting the eye, and I think that might have even been puncturing the eye during a surgery for something else. There have been wrong limbs that have been amputated. Certainly wrong patients, I mentioned that, have been operated on, and the wrong drugs have been prescribed to people, and they've had severe allergic reactions to them. Those are all, to me, if you ask me, and I'm the judge in those cases, those are all res ipsa type cases, and the defense lawyers and the doctors can come back and say, no, they're not, and here's why, and that's fine. They can do that, but let's present all that to the jury. Let's let them decide this. Let's not have to have an expert witness kick this case out because we can't afford one, because it costs us $10,000 to $100,000 to pay an expert to say the obvious thing. Don't leave scissors in there. Don't cut the wrong organ. Don't prescribe the wrong drug, or don't give the wrong drug after the right one's been prescribed. Follow the procedures that have been established for treating a patient, for performing the surgery. You know, do the things that you're supposed to be doing. And if you don't do them, I believe those issues should be submitted to a jury. You can have whatever defense you want from the doctors. You can have whatever defense, and they can submit that to the jury. But let the jury decide these issues. Can an ordinary lay person recognize negligence? And I think Yes, they can in most cases, unless it's just extremely complicated. I also mentioned earlier, so that's res ipsa, and that's an exception to the medical negligence expert testimony that's needed to prove the mistake, the medical negligence in your case. I also mentioned earlier of the four different legal theories that you can advance, the failure to diagnose, the maltreatment or wrongful treatment, that corporate negligence. The other one was informed consent, the duty to disclose. You know, unless there's an emergency, healthcare professionals are required to provide information to us. You can call it the duty to warn. Before we make a decision whether or not we're going to go forward with the surgery or treatment, we are entitled to information. Am I better with this or without it? Is it going to fix it? What's the chances it's going to fix it? Is it going to hurt something else? Are there alternatives? What are those alternatives? What product are you using? Are you going to put cow bone inside me? Human bone? Some other substance? What are going to be the side effects from those substance? You know, we want to know that information. We're entitled to know that information. We need to know what's going inside of our bodies. We need to know what's going to happen to our bodies. We need to know the ramifications. If I'm older, am I going to heal right? Do I have other issues that are different? Because you've looked at me in my particular case, do I have issues that are different than other patients? How is this going to affect me individually? So that's informed consent. And you'll probably be asked to sign this general generic form document that lists all these different 82 things that are being disclosed to you. Not always, and not always is everything disclosed to you, and not always are you asked to sign a document. If you are asked to sign a document that they say, oh, this is informed consent, you have to sign this, and you say, what if I don't sign it? And they say, well, we can't operate on you. And that's probably the policy and procedure of the hospital and the doctor's office that you're with. But if you, after you do read that And unfortunately, you often get a copy of those darn documents at just before the surgery, after you've taken time off from work, after you've readied yourself for this, after you have family, you've made all these arrangements, you get the darn informed consent right before you go into the medical room. It should be done well in advance, well in advance when you're first discussed options and the procedure. And hopefully doctors, healthcare professionals are doing that and not waiting till last minute. But if you do sign a document, make sure you get a copy right then. And if you're not provided a document, make sure you take notes, make sure you have someone there with you, especially if you're going to be medicated and not going to remember everything. You're going to want to have someone there that can talk about the discussion that was had and relate that later about what was or wasn't disclosed. You'll be surprised. You'll be surprised what goes into doctor's notes about what was or wasn't disclosed. And you'll say, no, we didn't talk about that. No, we never had a conversation. They'll put in there that someone wasn't in the room. You say, no, my dad was in the room. He was definitely there. We were there together. We heard everything. We weren't apart except for when I went under anesthesia and then had the surgery. So make sure that that you have a witness and that you can take some notes. You know, good doctors are going to do the disclosure well in advance, and you're going to have a good surgery procedure, and there's not going to be complications. So sometimes there can be complications, even though the doctor does everything right. There are those cases I'm talking about when things have gone wrong, when there's been a mistake that was made. To prove lack of informed consent, you have to show that the healthcare provider failed to inform you of a material fact or facts relating to treatment. You also have to show that you consented to that treatment without being fully aware or fully informed of the facts. Like maybe there was a recall, maybe there was an FDA warning, maybe there was alternatives to treatment, maybe there was a very low success rate. None of those things were told to you, but they were immaterial. Unfortunately, in Washington, now this isn't 100% rule, and I argued this in court recently that it's not 100% rule, but right now, the general standard is that you have to have medical expert testimony for informed consent too. I disagree with that. I think the standard should be under the evidence rules, whether or not you need an expert to talk about materiality, whether you need an expert witness to help the jury. But if it's so obvious that an ordinary layperson can determine whether or not something is material, then you don't need an expert witness. That's my position, and I'm going to stay with that position. I think that that's the reasonable position, and that should be the position on Washington law. And I'll continue to argue that, and hopefully judges will believe me on that. So that's under RCW 770-50. You know, these are tough cases. And again, we've only just really touched the tip of the iceberg on some of these medical malpractice related issues and the laws and how you prove them and how you go about proving them. They're really hard. People believe in doctors. They believe in healthcare professionals. So when you take these cases to a jury, it's a tough standard to overcome. And as I said, it's also potentially really costly. But don't give up. Don't give up. If you or your loved one has been injured by healthcare, a medical professional, talk to a lawyer. Get some advice about that. Seek someone out. Seek the truth. See what really happened, and take a look at your rights and what you can do about it. So that's going to wrap it up for Know Your Rights, episode 10. I'm really grateful that you stayed with me throughout the show, that you listened to the show, that you like it. And I'm excited to bring you next week's episode, which is going to be Judge David Larson out of Federal Way Municipal Court. We're going to talk about all things municipal court. And then following that, I mentioned we're going to have Bob Ferguson coming up, Attorney General of the State of Washington, going to come on real soon. Keep hitting me with your ideas and suggestions for a show, and let's educate. Let's keep educated about our legal rights out there, and let's not be taken advantage of. Thank you very much. Know Your Rights. Clay, 1180 AM, your conversation station.